I feel like this is terrible podcast content. I'm totally rambling.
I love talking about video games.
Cold medicine rambling. I'm trying to explain a video game. Anyway.
Hello, Fairy Tale Fix listeners. This is Abby.
And Kelsey.
Who is graciously joining us, hopped up on Dayquil for today's recording.
Yes.
And this is the podcast where we read classic fairy tales and we quote unquote, you know, fix them for a quote unquote modern audience.
Or, you know, however we think it's going to be a better story.
Or however we damn well please.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have the sick. I have a cold. It's kicking my butt.
Yeah.
Actually, I coughed during our minute of silence. Do we need to do that again or is that okay?
That's fine. I can cut around it.
Okay.
It was really quiet and I can... I think there'll be at least 30 seconds of quiet audio.
Yes, there's definitely at least 30 seconds. I felt bad it just came out. I wasn't expecting it. Adam got sick and he was sick for like 2 weeks, which sucks. You know, like the coughing, mm-hmm. hacking stuff out of your lungs. It's disgusting. and it was 2 weeks and I still was feeling amazing. And I was just like, man, I'm so lucky. I did not catch his cold. And then right as he started feeling better a couple weeks ago on a Tuesday, it was just like all of a sudden, it was like kind of the end of day at work. And all of a sudden, I just started getting body aches and a scratchy throat like suddenly.
No.
And I was just like, oh, no. Oh, no. No, I'm sure it's fine. It's probably just like allergies, right? No, it's fine.
I mean, 'tis the season, so maybe, but it wasn't.
It was not fine. Later that night, I was like, yeah, I'm definitely sick. So I've been trying to get over that. I've actually been spending a lot of time at home. Uh-huh. And I started playing Skyrim.
Which I am honestly very excited for you to engage in, like, honestly, a game that holds up so well. How are you liking it so far?
I like it. It's Skyrim Elder Scrolls. I don't know if that makes a difference, probably.
Well, it's actually Elder Scrolls is the series Skyrim is a part of. So okay. It's all the Elder Scrolls. There was like Oblivion and Morrowind, and then Skyrim is like the third one.
Okay. Yeah, it's fun. It's a little overwhelming because it's so big. There's like so much you can do. Mm-hmm. And I'm having a hard time figuring out some of that stuff. I had a really hard time figuring out where the fuck to go. I didn't know how to use the clairvoyance spell first. So I was just like constantly getting lost. But I finally figured that out. I kind of figured out the map and the little quest symbols. And
excellent.
It's getting easier. It's really fun. I'm a wood elf.
Yes. Yes. Tell me about what character you made for this.
Yeah, I made a wood elf. I named her Illyria Okart. I looked up. I had to look up some elf names because I couldn't come up with anything on my own.
I mean, and you picked a great Illyria Okart is a great elf name.
I thought that sounded very woodsy.
It is.
Very druidy. And I'm just sort of going through it and still trying to figure it out. But it's fun. I just bought a house because I need some place to store all my stuff.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, it's a great game. Adam watched me play and finally bought the online version so we could play together, I think, because we're more of a co-op. I don't usually play games unless it's co-op, but I've been sick. So Adam actually just bought it for me and was like, here's something to do while you're feeling crappy and stuck at home. So,
yeah. But you're going to play like Elder Scrolls Online together?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe. It's also one of those games where I can tell it's going to be a huge time suck. Like, I can see myself getting super into it and never coming out of my house. So I'm going to try to be wary of that. I've had actually a lot of Adam's friends are like, that's the game that made me stop, like, think I should stop playing games altogether because they just got into, like, too into it.
Absolutely. Like, I mean, yes, Skyrim is a huge, it's a huge time suck, and it's a really good game. Like, I feel like Skyrim is the open world game that made every other video game company on the planet think that open world games are the only way to go from now on, because everybody enjoyed Skyrim so much. It's just that, like, I have not to this day, I have never finished the main plot.
Yeah.
of Skyrim, because there's so many other cool and fun things to do around every corner. Because I also got lost a lot and eventually just stopped trying to figure it out. And I was like, whatever, I'm just going places now. I don't.
Yeah, that works.
The last time I played was a couple years ago, but I'm like the leader of like half the guilds, and I have done nothing in the main. In the main plot. I'm a werewolf, though. I think you should definitely try to become a werewolf.
I love that. How did you become a werewolf?
So in that, like, the first major city, so if you do a little bit of the main plot, the first major city, like Whiterun or whatever. Yeah,
where I bought my
house.
That you
come to. Where, is that where you bought your house? Well, then you're perfect. You've already got real estate in Whiterun. I think there's like, it's, there's like a, I'm trying to remember how I did it, but there's like a, basically like a guild or a secret society that you can infiltrate, and it turns out they're all werewolves. And then,
oh, nice. That's fun.
Anyway, so just, yeah, just like look around Whiterun for things to do, and you should bump would not into have expected the werewolf that action.
I would not have expected that out of Whiterun.
I know, right? It does seem surprising, but they're there.
It's fun. Games are fun. There's so much to do. And like, I also actually played a couple other games too, because I've been sick for so long. It's been almost 2 weeks. I also played this game called like the Mystery of Edith Finch, and it's not really like a game. It's more like a walk. It's, you're just walking through it and experiencing it. There are, I guess there are a couple of like small games where you're just kind of figuring out how every, like, so it's about this family and you're going through this house that you inherited, and like every single person in your family has died and you're kind of going through the house and discovering how they died.
So is it kind of creepy?
It's not really, it's kind of creepy, but it's more like atmospheric and mysterious and a little sad. And it doesn't, the ending really didn't like make any sense to me, but it was kind of, it's not like a game where you're like fighting anybody. You're just walking through this house, like looking for stuff, looking for clues. And then it kind of takes you through each person's death in a like kind of fantasy kind of way. I don't know. It was really interesting. If you want something totally like mindless, that's just like almost like watching a show and you're just kind of experiencing it. That's kind of fun.
I'll have to check that out. I'll have to add that to my wish list.
Yeah.
That does sound like, was this like the story was good? Like it was interesting?
It was good. It was really interesting. And like I said, the ending wasn't very satisfying for me, but it was fun.
Have you ever heard of a game called The Return of the Oberdeen? Or the Oberdin. So that's also kind of like a mystery game where you're not really fighting anything. You're just kind of wandering around looking for clues, but it's like a ghost ship situation. And so you get on board a ghost ship, and then your like sixth sense allows you to view like brief, like 5 second impressions of what happened in each room on the ship.
Yeah.
And then you're supposed to be like, so you have a photo of the crew that was on like the last ship's manifest. And you're supposed to figure out how each person died.
That's exactly like this game, because you have like your family tree. And as soon as you find out how this person died, you get like a portrait and you fill the family tree in.
Yeah.
Nice. What's it called again?
It's called The Return of the Oberdin, and it's just like the ship just sort of like mysteriously reappears, and everybody like with like all hands lost. Like there aren't even bodies.
Ooh,
as I recall, I haven't played it in a while because I'm not good at puzzle games. So I actually got bored and I stopped playing it. But but it was like really, but it's like, it's, but it was really spooky and it seemed something Kraken-y happened to them.
Ooh, I'll have to check it out. That sounds...
You might like it.
The Edith Finch game wasn't really like a puzzle game though, because I'm not good at puzzle games either. I get pretty like annoyed when I can't figure something out quickly enough and I give up. So I wouldn't call that one a puzzle game as much as like, it's pretty obvious. It's almost like a walkthrough. Like you're like, that's why I wouldn't even really call it a game. It's more like a an experience.
It's the Edith Finch experience.
It's an experience. You're just kind of figure, like you're just going through it. But I mean, sometimes that's nice. You don't really have to think about it too much. Mm-hmm. And then you're just experiencing the story. I don't know. It's interesting, I guess.
Maybe I'll like that one better then, because like I enjoyed like the kind of elements of like piecing together how each person in this photograph died.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I thought it was really hard.
Yeah.
And I couldn't figure it out. I only figured one of them out in the first like 2 hours of playing. And I was like,
oh, wow. No, this is like a full game you'll be done with in 4 hours. I recommend checking it out, but buy it when it's on sale. Mm-hmm. Add it to your wish list, because Adam bought it for me. And like the day after, it was $5.
Oh.
And he's like, you're worth the extra 15. It's fine. He's very sweet.
That is very sweet. But like, I don't know, $20 for like a 4 hour game, like feels steep to me.
Anyway. Yeah, it is.
I also bought Black Book the last like spring sale. So,
oh, nice. You'll have to tell me what you think. That was the game.
You own that one, right?
It was like a card game. I gave up on that immediately. I was like, I don't have the brain power for this. I don't want to memorize a bunch of cards and symbols. I'm done.
Oh, I love a deck builder. If it's a card game, like, because I don't know anything about it outside of like its general plot line. So I'm excited.
Yeah. You have to tell me if you like it.
I will let you know. I probably will. I like card games.
Yeah, you do. Well, you have a much better memory for that stuff than I do. What's been so
my
besides Game Corner?
Special little brain.
Your special little brain.
My super special little brain.
How are you doing? What's going on with you?
I have not been sick for 2 weeks, so I'm doing great.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
I spent some time with my family over like last weekend. I met my cousin's new husband. He seems like a nice boy.
Good.
Yeah, I don't know. So that was nice. I got to see my sibling, whom I love very much.
Yay.
And
that's fun.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a nice weekend.
Well, I'm really excited to tell you this story today. I found it. Oh, sorry.
We have two quick bits of housekeeping notes before we get into the main event of our podcast. First of all, we have a new witch's apprentice to thank for coming on board, and that would be Natalie, thank you so much for joining the Patreon team.
Yeah, thank you so much.
We are overjoyed. We love it every time we get a new apprentice, and we're excited to have you with us and hope you enjoy all of the bonus episodes that are coming your way. Please do comment on each and every one of them and let us know your thoughts about how unhinged those get over there. Yeah, that's fairytalefix.cash if anyone else would also like to become our witch's apprentice, you know. Go check that out. We also, we were talking with Caroline last episode about like the merits of calling it like, of calling our random readings a random reading or a blind reading. Mm-hmm. And our fairy overlord herself deigned to write in and told us something that we're honestly a little embarrassed we didn't think of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Giselle recommends that we call it a cold reading, like they do in the theater when they're reading a script cold and they haven't prepared anything. thing.
How did we not think of that? Especially you as a theater kid. I was like a little tiny for 1 second, a theater kid.
Mm-hmm.
But you, Abby.
I know. I'm embarrassed. I was raised by actors, and I didn't remember about cold readings. And then that's also like, that's one of the ways that you and I like started becoming closer friends, was we had to do cold readings of like scripts. Yep. As like scene partners in like acting class freshman year of high school.
So funny. Oh my goodness.
So Giselle, you're a genius. This is why you're a fairy overlord.
Mm-hmm.
We need your guidance.
Absolutely.
we really appreciate you.
Oh yeah. As soon as I read that, I was like, wow, I feel silly.
Dumb. Silly. Not dumb. I feel silly. Foolish.
Foolish.
Oh my goodness. Anyway.
Good
so,
point.
I'll be doing a cold reading of something at the end.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of this episode. And the length of your story will determine which book I read it out of. What story are you telling me?
So I found this book. I'm going to send you the artwork and I'll post it to our Patreon and to our Instagram. So I found this book little free library by my house, and it's called Why Mosquitoes Buzz in People's Ears.
Oh my God.
I immediately recognize the artwork because it's from the same artwork as the African folktale book I got.
Oh, okay.
By Leo and Diane Dillon. The art power couple.
I do love the cover art.
Yeah. And it says in the back, this folktale is from West Africa. The story is funny and the book won a Caldecott medal because the pictures are so beautiful.
Okay.
So I actually can't really tell how long it is, like, based on this, because I want to do a cold reading of it. So I feel like you haven't read it either.
Okay.
I haven't read it either.
Yay! So, I'm so excited. Okay, well, should we make some predictions?
Yes. I'd like you to give me 3 predictions about why mosquitoes buzz in people's ears. I'm dying to know.
Okay. My first prediction, because like I'm looking at this cover art, which we'll of course, share, but mm-hmm. that mosquito looks gossipy.
Right?
That mosquito, especially because like the man that the mosquito is buzzing in the ear of is like giving the mosquito major side eye.
yep.
I think the mosquito is telling him something juicy. So the mosquito has tea. Like my prediction is that gossip is a strong theme.
Okay. What's your second prediction?
My second prediction is that mosquitoes are like, there's something having to do with like humans being turned into mosquitoes.
Oh, I love that. Okay.
Is something. There's something there. Mm-hmm. and then my third prediction. This is so hard. I think I'm overthinking it. There's important food.
Important food. I love that. That's always a good
hungry.
One. I'm hungry.
I'm going grocery shopping after this too. So I want it to be important food to give me an idea of like what I should make for dinner.
I love it. Good tonight. Idea. Maybe you'll have an idea.
Yeah. Maybe I'll be inspired.
Oh, actually, I wonder if that African folktale podcast went over this one. He usually does like a recipe with his stories, which I love.
Oh, ooh.
Afro tales.
Afro tales. I'll have to go check that out.
Check them out. They're really fun. Mm-hmm. Okay. Why mosquitoes buzz in people's ears? My first prediction is very similar to yours in that the mosquito has secrets.
Ooh, I like the mosquito has secrets.
The mosquitoes are telling secrets, rather.
Mm-hmm.
I predict that there's like a curse on the mosquitoes.
Okay.
I was thinking maybe they were telling secrets about how to like they're trying to become human again or something. So it was very similar to yours. I'm thinking about this.
Yeah, but it's kind of the opposite.
Yeah. But you're right. He totally looks guspy and this guy is way side-eye.
Absolutely.
But I mean, of course you would give a mosquito the side-eye. Having them buzzing your ears is the worst. But my third prediction is that the mosquitoes are the antagonists.
Okay. Good one. Good prediction.
I mean, right?
Because they are the antagonists of my life.
Yeah, exactly. Like they are in real life, so they are in this story probably.
I think that's a solid prediction. I that's probably true.
Okay.
Later. No further ado. I'm so excited. Adieu. Oh, yeah.
By the way, this story is by Verna Ardema. I think I forgot to mention that at the beginning. So really excited. And you can find the link to buy this book. It's like it's a really small little book, but it's really cute. And there are pictures on every page. So it's great if you have kids or just like pictures and artwork.
I like pictures.
And yeah, it's linked in our show notes at our bookshop.org. So feel free to check that out. Okay. It says, for Marcia Van Dunyan, who heard this story first.
Aw. Okay.
Okay.
That's cute.
One morning, a mosquito saw an iguana drinking at a waterhole. The mosquito said, iguana, you will never believe what I saw yesterday.
Yes! Already, this is already so gossipy.
Try me, said the iguana. And the mosquito said, I saw a farmer digging yams that were almost as big as I am. What's a mosquito compared to a yam? Snapped the iguana grumpily. I would rather be deaf than listen to such nonsense. And then he stuck two sticks in his ears and went off, mech, 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 through the reeds. And then the iguana is also giving him major side eye.
Oh my God. I love it. Also, but that iguana is no fun.
You know, to be fair, a mosquito is like tiny compared. So the yams can't be that big.
Yeah, I know, but it's almost impressive how small the yams are then. Because yams are they're pretty big. They're pretty big vegetables.
The iguana was still grumbling to himself when he happened to pass by a python. The big snake raised his head and said, good morning, iguana. The iguana did not answer, but lumbered on, bobbing his head, badaman, badaman. Now, why won't he speak to me? Said the python to himself. Iguana must be angry about something. I'm afraid he is plotting some mischief against me.
Yes!
He began looking for somewhere to hide. The first likely place he found was a rabbit hole, and in he went, wasawasu, wasawasu, wasawasu.
Ooh, I like it, making the slithery.
Oh, is that noise. What that is? I don't know if this is like a language or if it's like, but yeah, you're right, probably like.
I think it's just supposed to be emphasis, like onomatopoeia, maybe.
I love it. Well, when Rabbit saw a big snake coming into her burrow, she was terrified.
Because don't pythons eat rabbits?
Yes, they definitely do. She scurried out through the back way and bounded, crick, 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 across a clearing. And it's hilarious because now the python is giving the iguana side eye.
Well, and then I can also see the rabbit down in the bottom corner giving the python side eye. Just everybody's
we're more
very
terrified
suspicious.
Side eye.
That's fair.
Than like fair. This, like annoyed, like what the fuck? A crow saw the rabbit running for her life. He flew into a forest. Caw, caw, caw. It was his duty to spread the alarm in case of danger. And a monkey heard the crow. He was sure that some dangerous beast was prowling near. He began screeching and leaping killy-willy through the trees to help warn the other animals. As the monkey was crashing through the treetops, he happened to land on a dead limb. It broke and fell on an owl's nest, killing one of the owlets.
No!
Oh my God! No! A dark turn.
Oh my God, this is a horrible game of telephone so far.
Yeah, and it has nothing to do about why mosquitoes buzz in people's ears.
Nothing
yet.
At all. And the mosquito was just like talking about yams.
We should have predicted that the mosquito would hardly be in it.
Mm-hmm. Why didn't we think of this?
Oh, that's so sad. So Mother Owl was not at home, for though she usually hunted only in the night, this morning she was still out searching for one more tidbit to satisfy her hungry babies. When she returned to the nest, she found one of them dead. Her other children told her that the monkey had killed it. All that day and all that night, she sat in her tree, so sad, so sad, so sad.
Oh no.
Jeez. Now it was Mother Owl who woke the sun each day so that the dawn could come. But this time, when she should have hooted for the sun, she did not do it. The night grew longer and longer. Ooh. The animals of the forest knew it was lasting much too long, and they feared that the sun would never come back. At last, King Lion called a meeting of the animals. They came and sat down, pem, 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 around the council fire. Mother Owl did not come, so the antelope was sent to fetch her. When she arrived, King Lion asked, "Mother Owl, why have you not called the sun? The night has lasted long, 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 and now everyone is worried."
Yeah. We need that.
Mother Owl is grieving, okay?
She's sad. Like, well, why did Monkey kill my son?
Well, Mother Owl said, "Monkey killed one of my owlets."
Yeah, that's right.
"Because of that, I cannot bear to wake the sun." The king said to the gathered animals.
That's so sad.
"Did you hear? It was the monkey who killed the owlet." "And now Mother Owl won't wake the sun so that day can come." Oh, I think they're all going to be pissed at the monkey. Yeah, there's a image of like what they're imagining, and the monkey's like all angry and grabbing one of the owlets.
Like viciously trying to kill it. Oh my God. Oh no. He looks so sinister.
Oh my gosh. And they're all giving like, everybody looks so pissed off. The artwork really is amazing in this.
I love this artwork. It's beautiful.
I'll post a few pictures to our Instagram, but if you want the whole thing, you got to buy the book. Mm-hmm. And it's worth it. This is amazing.
It's a good rule.
The King Lion called the monkey. He came before him, nervously glancing from side to side. Rim, 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 rim. "Monkey," said the king, "why did you kill one of Mother Owl's babies?" "Oh, king," said the monkey, "it was the crow's fault. He was calling and calling to warn us of danger, and I went leaping through the trees to help. A limb broke under me, and it fell, ta, on the owl's nest." The king said to the council, "So it was the crow who alarmed the monkey who killed the owlet, and now Mother Owl won't wake the sun so the day can come." Then the king called for the crow, and that big bird came flapping up. He said, "King Lion, it was the rabbit's fault. I saw her running for her life in the daytime. Wasn't that reason enough to spread an alarm?" The king nodded his head and said to the council, "So it was the rabbit who startled the crow, who alarmed the monkey, who killed the owlet, and now Mother Owl won't wake the sun so the day can come."
It's a real partridge in a pear tree situation. Mm-hmm.
So far, there are also zero humans in this story.
Yeah. I feel very misled by the cover. I thought that it was going to be an entire story about mosquitoes interacting with humans.
100%.
We're very foolish. We should have thought of that.
Then King Lion called the rabbit. The timid little creature stood before him, one trembling paw drawn up uncertainly. "Rabbit," cried the king, "why did you break the law of the nature and go running, running, running in the daytime?" "Oh, king," said the rabbit, "it was the python's fault. I was in my house minding my own business when that big snake came in and chased me out." The king said to the council, "So it was the python who scared the rabbit, who startled the crow, who alarmed the monkey, who killed the owlet, and now Mother Owl won't wake the sun so the day can come."
I don't know. I still think it's Crow's fault. I blame Crow, personally.
Her panicking.
Well, rabbits run all the time, you know? Rabbits get scared easy.
That's true, as they should.
As they should, because they're, you know, very easy prey.
Yeah.
The crow absolutely freaked out for no reason.
I love all the pictures of like, it's really funny. It has a picture for each one, like as they're imagining. So like the python looks like it's attacking the rabbit and he's all scary looking. And then like this next one, the iguana looks really mean because we're about to hear about the iguana. Okay. I'm sorry.
Perfect. Okay. All the pictures are the scenario as the animal imagines it.
Yeah, exactly. Like
of what of what the animal that did whatever it did thought was happening.
Yeah, it was the python's fault. It was the rabbit's fault. It's like the rabbit looking terrified running through the forest.
I love that. That's so clever.
Mm-hmm. King Lion called the python, who came slithering, wasu wasu, wasu wasu, past the other animals. But King, he cried, it was the iguana's fault. He wouldn't speak to me, and I thought he was plotting some mischief against me. When I crawled into the rabbit's hole, I was only trying to hide. The king said to the council, so it was the iguana who frightened the python, who scared the rabbit, who startled the crow, who alarmed the monkey, who killed the owlet, and now Mother Owl won't wake the sun so the day can come.
No, no, wait, wait, wait. Now I'm actually blaming the python. For not asking questions, just assuming that, like, oh, he's plotting against me. I have to go.
He's just really insecure. Hide okay.
No, no, he decided to go invade someone else's home because he couldn't, like, talk to the iguana. He couldn't say, like, hey, bro, you mad at me?
Are you mad at me? Always. The iguana was not at the meeting, for he had not heard the summons. The antelope laughed when they saw the iguana coming. Bademan, Bademan. With the stick still stuck in his ears, King Lion pulled out the sticks, purup, purup. Then he asked the iguana, what evil have you been plotting against the python? None, none at all, what? Cried the iguana. Python is my friend. Aw.
Aw, so he wasn't mad at me.
Aw. Then why wouldn't you say good morning to me, demanded the snake.
Oh my God. He's so insecure.
I didn't hear you or even see you, said the iguana. Mosquito told me such a big lie, I couldn't bear to listen to it. So I put sticks in my ears.
And now a baby owl is dead.
The lion laughed. So that's why you had sticks in your ears. Yes, said the iguana. It was the mosquito's fault. So the king lion said to the council, so it was the mosquito who annoyed the iguana, who frightened the python, who scared the rabbit, who startled the crow, who alarmed the monkey, who killed the owlet, and now Mother Owl won't wake the sun so another day can come.
Well, good. I'm glad we've gotten to the bottom of it, but like, will you wake up the sun now? Like,
punish the mosquito, punish the mosquito, cried all the animals. When Mother Owl heard that, she was satisfied. She turned her head toward the east and hooted, hoo, 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 and the sun came up.
No one's going to summon Mosquito to the meeting?
Meanwhile, the mosquito had listened to all of it from a nearby bush.
Oh, okay.
She crept under a curly leaf and was never found and brought before the council. But because of this, the mosquito had a guilty conscience. To this day, she goes about whining in people's ears, Zee, why is everyone still angry at me? When she does that, she gets an honest answer. Ah! Kapow! The end.
Damn. Oh my God.
Wow.
Is that the end?
That's the end. So it's a pretty short story.
Yeah.
But I thought it was very fun. That's very cute. Not at all what I expected.
No.
Because it totally looks like she's gossiping, but she's really just like, why is everyone mad at me?
Why is everyone so mad? I was just trying to tell iguana about yams.
I know. It doesn't really seem that like.
Iguana had a huge overreaction to just being told about yams.
Seriously.
Everyone had a huge overreaction to everything that happened.
Yep. So maybe it was really nobody's fault.
It seems like the moral of the story is supposed to, like, be a warning about being a gossip.
Maybe.
Maybe?
Yeah. I guess. Or maybe being a liar.
Or, yeah, telling tall tales. Something.
Or for each one, just don't overreact, maybe?
Ask some more questions before you flip out.
Yep. All right. Well, points-wise, I think we both got zero. Yep.
Yeah, because, well, like, what – I guess, like, the
– I think I have one, actually, because I guess the mosquitoes were the antagonists. And that's true of the story and in real life. But was the mosquito the antagonist? Everybody's mad at him, I feel like.
And for no real reason. I don't know. Like, I feel like low-key gossip was a theme because every animal kept making their own assumptions about what was happening and then kind of escalating it.
But your prediction was the mosquito has got... Oh, right. Actually, what was your prediction? I wrote the mosquito has tea.
I said gossip is a theme.
Yeah, I think that's actually what you said. Okay, perfect. I'm going to give you... we both get 1 point.
Okay. Because also the mosquito thinks she has tea. It's just also... It's just not anything anyone was interested in.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, no one gives a shit about the size of the yams the farmer is pulling out.
That's hilarious. Unless it was supposed to be a really giant mosquito. I don't know. Like, the size of yams. Yams are way bigger than mosquitoes.
Way bigger.
So I have questions. But that was very fun.
It was a cute little story. I did like all right. it. My only fix for it is that at any point, any of the other animals, you know, ask some questions first.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
But maybe, but as always, that's also the lesson.
Ask the bird questions or all the animals. Then again, I can't really blame the rabbit for not asking the python questions.
No. It is not the rabbit's fault because pythons eat rabbits. It's python's fault for being so relatable.
I know.
And being all like, oh my God, iguana is mad at me.
I love how iguana's like, no, python's my friend.
I love python. Python's my boy.
And iguana's relatable for just being like, ugh, I cannot listen to this. God. And leaving.
Nobody gives a shit about that. I'm just leaving. And I'm going to stick my earbuds in my ears and just tune everybody else out.
Those relatable are the thing. Best characters. Oh, yeah. Poor baby owlet. That was sadder than I was expecting it to be.
I know. That was such a dark turn. Surely we could have learned this lesson some other way.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, what are you telling me today?
Well, we still got like 20 minutes or so. So I think we could do a Ruth Manning Sanders.
Okay.
If you're up for that. Or I can find something in like the Brothers Grimm.
I'm so up for it. If you're ready.
Let me pick a book.
Okay.
Are we feeling a book of magic horses or a book of heroes and heroines today?
Definitely horses.
Let's do magic horses.
I'm a little scared because we've been burned by this book before.
We have, but I'm hoping there's got to be a good one.
Hell yeah. You know? I bet there's a great one in there.
Okay, there are 16... stories. We've already read Master Billy.
that was the one
that was the disappointing one.
Yeah, that didn't really like, have like a horse.
It wasn't even a horse. So boo on that. I'm gonna roll for it.
Okay.
Using the invisibility potion that you bought me.
Ooh, I love it.
Okay, we have landed on story number 7, which is The Princess and the Iron Tower.
Ooh, that sounds promising.
Intriguing. Yeah. It says the story is from Bohemia.
Okay.
I feel like we've had a story from that region before, but I honestly can't remember where it's supposed to be. So we're going to do a quick geography corner. Bohemia is the westernmost and largest historical region of the Czech Republic. And the Czech Republic is... Oh, Prague is in the Czech Republic. Isn't that exciting? I didn't know Prague was a Czech city.
Geography Corner is always the best.
I love Geography Corner. And Prague is supposed to be one of the most beautiful cities in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually like a place I wanted to go. I just didn't think it was in Czechoslovakia or Czechia or Czechia, the Czech Republic. So the Czech Republic is bordered by Germany to the west, Poland to the north, Slovakia to sort of like the southeast, and then Austria to the south to kind of give us an idea of where in Europe it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is a
teeny tiny country.
It's a teeny tiny country. Okay. And we're going to be reading The Princess in the Iron Tower. What do we think The Princess in the Iron Tower is about?
How long is it? Do we do like the full three?
Good question.
I don't know why I think that's going to help me. It's not, but.
We definitely get the full three on this one. It looks like it's actually kind of a longer one.
Okay. Is that okay with you?
I'm up for it if you're up for it.
Yeah, I'm totally up for it.
Cool.
All right. My first prediction is that, classic damsel in distress, it seems like so far.
Okay.
So I'm going to predict that a prince is going to try to save her from the tower.
Perfect.
My second prediction is there's a talking cat. No, wait.
Yes.
Talking horse. Duh. It's the Book of Magic Horses.
Oh, yeah. God. It's the Book of Magical Horses. You have to make horsey predictions.
What are the... Okay. I feel like we always think, man, we should have made this prediction. What am I going to say about that for this story?
I mean, I know what I want to say.
Okay. Prince trying to save her from her tower, talking horse, and I predict that there's a magic amulet.
Nice.
Okay.
I love that. That's excellent. Okay. My predictions. I predict that the princess in the Iron Tower is not, she's not a major character. I think she's like the goal of the story.
Great prediction.
I think the protagonist is the dude who's going to save her from the tower.
Okay.
And the talking horse is barely in it. This is my prediction. It's not what I want to see, but.
Okay. Do you want to predict full on talking horse is barely in it? Or do you want to just predict that the horse is barely in it?
The magic horse is barely in it. That's what I mean. The magic, like, cause it's a, it's got to have one magic horse. Talk?
I feel like if it's a magic horse, it has to talk, but it might not. So.
But it, the magic horse and Master Billy was a reed that got turned into a donkey or something. Like it wasn't even.
Who even remembers?
But you know what? I'm gonna rescind that third one. I'm actually not gonna make any predictions about the horse at all. I've decided I want to predict that there's a dragon guarding the tower.
Ooh, dragon guarding the tower.
That's, I want to keep these aspirational.
That's a great prediction.
Okay.
I hope it comes true. I want there to be a magic horse and a dragon. That's the wonderful shirt had that.
I know. And the best stories are when the two come together.
Absolutely.
This is The Princess in the Iron Tower. Part one, how Baldwin found the princess.
Ooh.
This is a long one, so strap in.
Okay, I'm settling in.
Once upon a time, a noble lady named Gertrude lived in a lonely old mansion house under the mountains. Lady Gertrude had four sons. The two eldest, Otto and Adelbert, were away at the wars. What wars? Who the fuck knows?
Just the
wars. There were wars. The third son, Leopold, was a page at the court of the King of Bohemia, and only the youngest son, Baldwin, was still at home with his mother.
No, everybody has like names.
I know, it's awesome. It's so I'm into great. It so far.
RMS.
Just what a queen.
She's the best.
Lady Gertrude had a magic mirror. When she wanted to see how her sons were getting on, she had only to look in the mirror and say, "Golden mirror, magic mirror, without delaying, without staying, show me what my sons are doing."
Oh, I love that for her.
She's got the like medieval version of like track my kid's iPhone.
Yep.
Then in the mirror, she saw her two eldest sons, Otto and Adelbert, winning honors on the battlefield, and Leopold, her third son, in great favor at the court of the King of Bohemia. Meanwhile, her youngest son, Baldwin, was still at home, had grown into a very handsome lad, and he longed to set out on knightly adventures, but Lady Gertrude was unwilling to let him go. Wait, she said, your time has not yet come.
Aw.
She wants to keep her baby with her.
Yeah.
One day when Lady Gertrude looked into her magic mirror and asked to see her sons, she saw a huge, dark forest where all kinds of wild animals were wandering sadly to and fro. What could this mean? Where were her sons? Show me my sons, she said to the mirror, but all the mirror showed her was a beautiful white horse, and beside it, a greyhound and a wolf.
Ooh.
I know.
Is this one of those where they got turned into something?
Yeah, it might be a John and his brother's situation.
The magic horse is actually just a man.
Yeah, probably. As she watched, an elegant lady mounted the horse and rode away, chasing the wolf and followed by the greyhound. I kind of love this so far. Okay.
Yeah, that's cool.
Oh, and there's a great illustration of Lady Gertrude looking at her magic mirror.
Ooh, damn. She's got it going on.
She does. Hottie. But show me Otto, show me Adelbert, show me Leopold, cried Lady Gertrude to the mirror. But the mirror only showed her the white horse, the greyhound, and the wolf.
So that's only three, right?
Yep.
Huh, okay. And there's four, like, brothers.
Yeah, yeah. Because Baldwin
is still interesting too, that there's four brothers and not three.
I know. It's kind of an interesting pattern break.
Mm-hmm.
Again and again, Lady Gertrude asked the mirror to show her these three sons. And again, the mirror showed her the forest, the white horse, the greyhound, and the wolf, until at last it really sunk in that her three sons must have been changed into these three animals.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that the mirror is broken.
Yep.
Then Lady Gertrude asked the mirror to show her where this forest was, and the mirror showed the eastern frontier of Bohemia, where a five-cornered iron tower stood by the roadside at the entrance to a great dark forest. And from a high window of the tower, a most beautiful maiden was looking out.
Ooh.
Ooh. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Early next morning, Lady Gertrude went to the sleeping Baldwin's bedside and shook him into wakefulness. My dear son, she said, your ardent wish to set out on adventures has reached its fulfillment, and a high duty calls you away from your home. Baldwin is stoked, and he leaps joyfully out of his bed. And his mother goes on.
Moment.
I know. It's his moment.
This is my moment
in the sun. Oh, my God. I want them to make a Gallivant-style musical.
Mm-hmm.
Out of this. So she goes on to tell him what has befallen his brothers, that some evil power has turned one into a white horse, another into a greyhound, and the third into a wolf, and it is you who must deliver them. So show yourself worthy of such a valiant deed. Take the high road to the east until you are on the other side of the frontier, where at the entrance of a wide and dark forest, you will find a high five-cornered iron tower. Wait there, and you will receive from the hand of innocence that which will protect you from all evil.
Mm, what?
She knows a lot from just, like, seeing the tower in her little mirror.
Yeah, I guess so. And that tower sounds awesome, by the way. I love the imagery of it. It sounds, yes, like, scary looking.
It sounds very like Isengard.
Yeah, that's totally what I'm picturing.
Yeah, that's totally what I'm picturing too. Baldwin is so excited. He joyfully begins to dress. I mean, I can kind of like feel that. It was kind of like, yeah, I get to really stick it to my cool older siblings. It's like, oh, did you get in trouble?
I got to come save you.
You had to rely on me, the youngest boy, to come save you.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. So he puts on the armor that his mother had brought him, girded on the good sword, which she had specially saved for him. And after he had once more embraced his kind mother and received her best blessing, he swung himself gaily upon the horse she had given him.
I love it.
He
is so
fucking excited.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Adventure.
Hell yes.
He is not worried about his brothers even a little bit.
No, I love the idea that he's also like especially stoked to help, like, save his older brothers, where he's like, ha-ha. You needed me to come get you, huh?
So He rides east as his mother had instructed him and came upon a great forest. At the entrance to the forest stood a high five-cornered tower of pure iron, which he recognized to be the very tower of which his mother had told him. Baldwin decided to stay here and stepped into a tavern which stood by the roadside not far from the tower.
Mm-hmm.
In the night, he was lying awake in his bed in the tavern, wondering what he was to do next, when suddenly he heard a delightful sound of music coming not far off. So he got up, dressed, and went out to the open air. And quite distinctly, coming from the tower, he heard the sweet voice of a girl singing to a lute. And this is what she was singing. Now is the lovely month of May, when the little flowers bloom in the vale, when the lark sweetly sings and joyfully sings the nightingale. When the true lover once more vows anew to the service of love, but I unhappily sit in captivity, sit sadly and alone. If it were God's will, then God's will be done, but chains of sorcery are too heavy for me. And I see how outside comes the daylight, see how the night falls again, but forever and forever, I am a prisoner here. No joy comes near me.
Aw.
It's a sad song. Baldwin was greatly touched by this sorrowful song. He didn't doubt for a moment that it was his destiny to free this unhappy maiden and that he would receive from her hands the means to rescue his unfortunate brothers. This is also giving the section of Monty Python and the Holy Grail where Sir Lancelot just like slaughters everybody on his way up to the tower. He's like, I heard you singing. He listened for a long time after that, but the voice was silent. However often he called with the kindest words, not another sound met his ears. Baldwin waited and watched in vain the whole of the next day, the next night, and again the whole day, but the lovely captive didn't appear. It wasn't until the third night, when he was again roaming out in the open, that the maiden appeared on the battlement of the tower. Baldwin saw her white robe shimmering in the moonlight. He called to her and besought her to tell him how he could set her free, because he would gladly venture his life to rescue her.
He's totally forgotten about his brothers.
Yeah. They'll be fine. I can wait 3 days.
What happened to bros before hoes?
That is not Baldwin's style. He is hoes before bros 100%.
Yep.
Greatly cheered by these kind words, the lovely maiden, yes, whose name was Milada.
Milada, okay.
She gets a name too. I love it.
I love that.
Bade him stand under the only window of the tower, and she would come down and talk to him from the window. Baldwin followed her bidding, and as he found an oak tree growing close to the tower beside the window, he climbed into the tree and swung himself lightly and nimbly from branch to branch until he reached a branch close to the window itself. There he awaited the coming of the maiden, who was not a little astonished when she, by the light of the moon, saw the handsome youth so near to her.
Oh, this is so romantic.
It's very romantic.
Very classic fairy tale.
Yeah. He, too, was astonished by the beauty of Milada's face, which, though overlaid with the pallor of deep sorrow, was yet wonderfully lovely. It's love at first sight.
I want her to be a witch and be tricking him.
Gosh, I don't think that's what's happening based on the next paragraph. Baldwin cried, "Speak, lovely maiden. Tell me whether it is in my power to set you free and what means I must use to this end." And Milada answered, "I thank you, generous knight, but great as is my confidence in your valor, that valor alone will not suffice to free me or to protect you from the malignancy of a deceitful sorceress." Rather,
ooh,
should
you... sorceress.
I know. I'm excited.
I love that.
We may end up having our usual fix for this. That's my mid-story prediction. Is she should have just stayed and become the sorceress's apprentice.
Oh, hell yes. I think it's been a while since we've had one of those, too.
I know. It has been a minute. "Rather should you flee, O handsome youth, before she lures you into her snare and prepares you for a most cruel fate. But Baldwin answered, "I am by no means so faint-hearted as to flee when danger threatens. I have made up my mind to free you, and if you will do me the honor to take me as your knight, I swear to you that I will not lay my head to rest until I have set you once more at liberty." "Tell me, lovely maiden, who is the cruel one who has imprisoned you here?"
He's kind of reminding me of the princes from Into the Woods, like just a little too excited. And like,
yes,
is he really doing it for her or just kind of doing it for himself to be the hero?
He just wants to be the hero. He cannot resist. Mm-hmm. The harder to get, the better to have. Agreed?
Yep.
Oh, boy. That's so spot on. I'm not going to be able to think of anything else for the rest of the story. And Mulata answered, "As you insist on it, so I will tell you my sorrowful history." Backstory time.
Mm-hmm.
"I am the princess of the royal family of Bohemia, and I was betrothed to my cousin, you, the son of the present king, when the wicked sorceress Ismene." Ooh, she gets a name too.
Ismene. Oh, I love the name too.
Yeah. "The owner of this enchanted forest came from a distant land to the king's court and fell in love with my betrothed. You can have him. He's my cousin."
I was hoping he was going to say fell in love with me and kidnap me.
Another fix for the story. She's not actually trapped. She's just pretending for like propriety's sake.
Instead of like they're sisters, it's like, oh yeah, she kidnapped me.
She kidnapped me. Oh no.
I love
this really hot magic lady is keeping me in her lovely tower in the middle of her enchanted forest.
It's the worst.
Nothing to do but live here, I guess. No, you don't have to rescue me. Don't you have other stuff to do?
Don't you have brothers that you gotta go rescue?
Don't you have brothers to rescue or whatever? Oh boy. But no, as in the text of the story, Ismene has fallen in love with Mulata's cousin,
mm-hmm.
slash her betrothed, you.
Okay.
"She declared to him her feelings and left no means untried to win him away from me. But when she found that neither her beauty nor her skill were able to win him from me, ew, her love turned to spite," which she vented on me. Gross. Ismene is not a girl's girl in the story.
No, definitely not. Unfortunately.
Unfortunately. "In the middle of the night, the demons under her command seized me and bore me through the air to this tower, where she, by her magic power, keeps me shut in. Here I have languished for many moons, and my betrothed has meanwhile died of grief at my loss."
Wow.
Dang, okay. It's very dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he should have just, like, married someone who wasn't his cousin. It's weird.
That's how they did it back then.
No, I know.
Keep it in the family.
I mean, true. But Mulata, you're really dodging a bullet here. Or your children mm-hmm. are. "Then," cried Baldwin, glowing with rage and indignation, "tell me, where is this heartless creature? Surely it is the very same who has turned my three brothers into animals and so keeps them for herself." He's making a lot of logic leaps here.
Yeah, he is. He just feels bad. He's not looking for his brothers. So he's like, oh, this is probably related, right?
It's related. I am not totally forgetting about them. I'm sure they're around here somewhere.
Yep.
"Yes," said Mulata, "it may well be so, because the forest is thronged with thousands of unhappy knights and princes whom the sorceress has turned into animals. But how will you alone vanquish her magic arts? Her beauty will ensnare you, like all the others, until you too will wander through the forest in the shape of a lion or stag. But tell me, noble youth, who you are and what has led you to this lamentable place."
I don't know. Ismene sounds fun.
Ismene sounds really fun. I like her.
Villain sympathizers.
This also sounds a little bit like a Jolene situation.
Oh, totally.
"Baldwin told the princess what quest had brought him here. And when the princess saw that he was quite determined to go into the forest and to compel the wicked sorceress to set her and his brothers free, she said, Since you will not be dissuaded from your intention, which is so noble and good that you have surely the protection of heaven, listen to me carefully. Go to the sorceress Ismene. Your handsome looks will win her heart. May God protect your heart. Yeah. In 2 days, the moon will be full, and at the full moon, Ismene must fall into a deep sleep that lasts for 1 hour. During that hour, nothing can wake her.
Hmm.
Fun.
Okay. Interesting.
Interesting. Well, you know, you got to have a drawback. While Ismene sleeps, all the animals in the enchanted forest take their human shapes once more, but without being able to leave the forest. When the sorceress wakes up, they turn back into animals. You will have just 1 hour to find your brothers. You might even have time to rob the sorceress of her power while she's asleep. Take this ring with the bright shining ruby. I was given it by my grandmother, a powerful fairy. Oh, cool.
That is really cool. She's a fairy apprentice.
Yes, she's a fairy apprentice. She's part fae. I love this. And if I hadn't forgotten to turn the stone inwards when Ismene's demon seized me, the good fairy would have arrived to free me from their power. But she cannot enter this tower, so take this ring. Take it. It will protect you in danger, and may you return safely to the Iron Tower. At Baldwin's request and taking leave, Milada reached him her tender hand through the iron grating, and he pressed a heartfelt kiss upon it, promising that he would soon return and would open the tower.
Aww.
The princess drew back, and Baldwin climbed down from the tree and returned to the tavern, where he lay awake the rest of the night, thinking of all he had to do. Part 2. Baldwin meets Ismene, the sorceress.
Ooh, is he going to fall for her?
I don't know. Maybe it's a situation where it's like the princess thinks she's so incredibly beautiful.
Mm-hmm. But Baldwin's clearly. Eh. Yeah, Baldwin's like, what?
Whatever. At daybreak, Baldwin left the tavern to seek out the sorceress Ismene, and he hadn't walked very far into the forest when the sounds of a hunt fell on his ears. He heard the cheerful winding of the hunting horn, the merry sound of the hunting song ringing out of the thicket. Then he heard the dogs giving tongue. Ugh.
What?
Okay.
Giving what?
giving tongue. That's what the book says. I'm going to roll right past it. And the wild clamor of the hunt. Yes, we are ignoring this. From all sides pressed forward, hunters and dogs and girls in short skirts with the weapons Ooh. Of the hunt. Hell yeah. Okay.
Okay. What kind of hunt is this?
This is like an Artemis situation, I think, where she keeps a lot of like huntresses around her.
I love it.
Me too. Man,
Ismene just sounds more and more fun.
I like Ismene. Ismene's lifestyle is cool. I think if the princess just like, I don't know, decided to give in a little bit and actually have a good time, she could come on these hunts too.
Well, I think that was the thing. Ismene doesn't like her. She's not a girl's. Well, maybe she's a pick me girl.
Oh, you're right. It's pick me energy. Maybe like only other pick me's can come with her.
They're not really her friends.
She's a, once again, girl boss, gaslight, gatekeep kind of bitch. So a wolf bolted out of the thicket and stood quietly beside Baldwin, almost as if it sought protection at his feet. Baldwin thought of the wolf his mother had seen in the magic mirror and was looking compassionately down at the creature. When following the fresh trail came a crowd of hunters and dogs, and at their head, upon a snow-white thoroughbred, in an elegant hunting costume, was a beautiful woman whom Baldwin immediately guessed to be Ismene, the sorceress, mistress of this forest.
Ooh.
She sounds hot.
She does. Is she also in a short skirt?
Elegant hunting costume? So I don't know. Probably.
Maybe?
Or she just keeps all of her huntresses in short skirts as eye candy. Ismene was as much astonished as overjoyed to find a young knight in her forest.
Mm.
The handsomest lad she had ever seen in her life. She received him in the kindest manner and immediately invited him to accompany her to her palace. Baldwin was dazzled by her great beauty, and he had to admit to himself that he had not expected so delightful an enemy. In fact, he might have fallen in love with her on the spot if his heart had not been already full of love for the princess in the tower. No.
And you just met both of these people.
Mm-hmm. He's a, you know, he's a puppy. He's an insta-love side of guy. He doesn't think a lot.
I still think it could be a fun twist where the princess is actually the witch and Ismene's like captured her and like so she can't do more evil.
That's maybe a fun spin on this story. I like it.
I mean, I don't think that's where this is going.
Hell no, it's definitely not. That's not happening. But that would be cool though.
Mm-hmm.
He accepted Ismene's invitation, and at his request, the wolf was permitted to run off unharmed into the bushes. For 2 days, Baldwin was entertained royally by the sorceress. When she asked him who he was and from whence he came, he told her that he was the son of a knight, that he had set out in search of adventure, and that he could never be sufficiently grateful for the chance that had led him to her forest. Ismene the sorceress was satisfied with this tale, and she made up her mind that she would keep this handsome youth with her forever. On the evening of the full moon, the sorceress, as the princess had told Baldwin, retired to her bedchamber to sleep for 1 hour. Something that actually just occurred to me, too, is like, so she doesn't sleep, obviously. And Baldwin promised not to sleep until he had rescued the princess. So has Baldwin been, like, awake for 3 days?
Maybe he just meant, like, I won't rest, like, but he probably does, right?
Yeah, maybe he meant figuratively.
Yeah. You're no good if you don't have a like good amount of sleep. You know what I'm saying?
Like that's a torture tactic is keeping people awake because they start to hallucinate and shit.
Mm-hmm.
She asked Baldwin not to take it amiss that she must leave him for that hour. Perhaps he would permit her maidens to try to shorten the time for him with songs and dances. The maidens assembled in the great hall of the palace, and while some of them danced, others sang to the sound of the harp. But Baldwin was not cheered by their singing and dancing, and whilst they were all whirling round, he left the hall, hurried into the dense forest, and ran up and down, shouting out his eldest brother's name. Otto! Otto! And at last, Otto appeared, not as a white horse, because since the sorceress was asleep, Otto was now in his own handsome human form.
Yay!
Otto told Baldwin how he and his two brothers, Adalbert and Leopold, had met the sorceress in three separate places, and how she had changed Adalbert into a greyhound, Leopold into a wolf, and he himself into the white horse which she usually rode. "Alas," cried Otto, "how swiftly has the hour that Ismene sleeps gone by, and I have so much more to tell you. But back to the palace, Baldwin. The sorceress must not miss you when she wakes, or you too will not escape her vengeance."
Doesn't he have to go get her power during this hour?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's he waiting for?
He's got tasks.
Yeah, like, go do that first and then find your brothers.
You can talk to Otto later.
You can catch up later.
Baldwin spoke a few words of comfort to the unhappy Otto and then hurried back to the palace. He decided to stay there until the next full moon when Ismene would again sleep for 1 hour. And during that hour, he hoped to find out from Otto what means he must use to overthrow Ismene's power. I really feel like you should have talked about that first.
Seriously. Also, that's like a full month. That's, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a long time.
Yeah. But we move on to part three, which sounds hopeful. Baldwin frees the princess.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. He figures it out, I guess. The elegant sorceress Ismene became day by day more delighted with her guest Baldwin. She felt that she could not live without him, and she offered him her hand in marriage and a share of her power. That's cool.
A share of her power. Nice.
Awesome. Baldwin, do it. Get married.
It's been a month. You forgot about that other princess, right?
You've known Ismene longer at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Baldwin pretended to consent to her wishes, but he insisted that they should put off their marriage for 5 weeks because, he said, he had taken a vow that he would not marry until after his next birthday.
Okay.
Okay.
I won't get married until I'm 25, at least.
At least. So came the time of the next full moon, and no sooner was Ismene in her bedchamber than Baldwin plunged into the forest and sought out his brother Otto, who was astonished to hear that Baldwin was still free and that he had remained in his own shape after 4 weeks in the domain of the sorceress.
And maybe a little jealous.
Maybe a little jealous. Just a little bit. Baldwin's just that good. He's a super charming boy.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of has like a guileless golden retriever energy that is kind of hard to see through, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Otto told Baldwin that all Ismene's power lay in a golden key and in a magic rose that never withered.
Ooh, a magic rose. Why
I know.
A magic amulet. Come on, people. I could have guessed magic mirror.
Uh-huh.
Magic object. I thought about that for a minute, but.
Yep. You might got a little too specific.
I specifically wanted an amulet.
I know.
Oh, well.
Whatever. That's what it's for. You know, predictions.
To be wrong.
To say what you want.
Yeah. What do you want out of this story? So far, a little disappointed in the lack of magic horses.
I know. It's my prediction of the horses barely in it would have absolutely.
Yep.
Worked for this. And there's no dragon, so.
Ah, dang.
So far. Maybe there will be.
So far, you never know.
Could be a Maleficent situation where the sorceress turns herself into a dragon.
Yes.
Exactly. Okay. This golden key, Otto said, opens the door of the Iron Tower, and if the key is taken away from Ismene, she will have no more power over the captives of the tower and the forest. Then all we who are condemned to roam the forest in the shapes of animals will regain our human forms. But while Ismene has the rose, a great deal of her power yet remains. With the rose, she can change herself to any shape she pleases, and her demons still have to obey her. When Baldwin heard this, he left his brother with the promise of a speedy deliverance and hurried to Ismene's bedchamber in order to rob her of her power. The sorceress lay asleep upon a magnificent couch, and beside her head, upon a richly embroidered cushion, lay the two talismans, the golden key and the magic rose. So they're easy to find and right next to each other.
I know. That was easy.
Yeah.
She's not going to hide them in a more like safe place, especially when she's out for her hour nap, her full moon nap.
During the 1 hour a month where I am vulnerable, I am going to put the two objects that give me my special powers right next to my head.
And if everybody else knows this already, why aren't they doing anything?
Right? And you can just walk in there and grab it? Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Huh. It never occurred to me then to do that, maybe to try anything.
When I turn back into my human self, I can just stroll on in and grab those things. Maybe it's just because he's her betrothed and like, because I'm thinking like her maidens are actually the demons that have to obey her.
Yeah,
so maybe probably. It's like the maidens will let Baldwin in because he's her fiance.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
And she's going to give him half her power when they get married anyway.
Aww. So. She just wants love.
It sounds like a good deal to be quite honest.
And then you get to keep your brothers as like...
Do you really
horse,
want
a wolf and a greyhound and be like,
I know, it's fine. Eventually, I'm sure she'll free them. If you ask.
I know.
Like, it's fine. Do you really want the inbred fairy princess?
She is a literal fairy princess.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
So, they're right there. On the cushion. Baldwin first snatched up the golden key so he could free Mulata, but then as he stretched his hand out to seize the magic rose, because they're right the fuck next to each other, Jesus.
Why didn't you just grab them both at the same time?
I know.
They're both small
You have
objects.
Two hands. The hour
it sounds
was
like something's
up.
About to go terribly wrong.
Because you did not time this well. The hour's up. She's awake and she's right there. Ismene awoke, snatched the rose, and leaps swiftly from her couch and waves the rose in the air. And at once the room was filled with flames.
Ooh.
Ismene's demons rushed upon Baldwin, who ran out of the room and fled away down the halls of the palace, hotly pursued by Ismene and her demons. Just in time, Baldwin remembered the magic ring that Mulata had given him. Hell fucking yes. He turned the ruby inwards, and suddenly the good fairy appeared, bathed in a dazzling white light.
Ooh.
Ismene turned back, appalled, and the demons sank powerless into the ground.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah, it is cool. The good fairy congratulated Baldwin for ending the enchantment of the forest and vanquishing the greater part of Ismene's power. Ismene had slipped away abashed. But of course, she still had the magic rose.
Yeah, she did.
Then the good fairy went with Baldwin to the Iron Tower. He unlocked the door with the golden key. Mulata joyfully ran out. And with one word, the good fairy turned the Iron Tower into a pile of dust.
Ooh.
I know.
Love it.
Then she handed Baldwin a pomegranate and said, "Take this fruit, which will never wither. And if at any time misfortune strikes you, cut it open that I may appear to comfort and help you." Because the ring, I guess, is a one-time thing.
One-time use only.
One-time use only. Like, it's a bit of a hat on a hat. Like, you already have the ring.
Yeah, she could have just said use the ring. But, you know, now there's a magic pomegranate. Still, there's a magic ring, a magic pomegranate, a magic mirror.
Magic key, magic rose.
Hey, the story's not over. Maybe a magic amulet will show up at the end.
And this, I mean, this story abounds with magic objects. So
should have just said
it's not
magic
too late.
Jeez.
And without waiting for Baldwin's thanks, the good fairy vanished. Now shouting and cheering, there came from the forest a great crowd of knights and princes released from their animal shapes, and among them came Baldwin's three brothers, Otto, Adalbert, and Leopold. They were all riding their horses, which Ismene the sorceress had turned into horseflies.
That's funny. She's funny.
She's funny! I love her!
I hope she doesn't die. I hope she just gets away and like... And they're just like, oh.
Does mischief elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Ismene is so fun. So the horses have also now regained their own shape. And merrily turning their backs on the forest, they all set out for the court of the King of Bohemia. The king was overjoyed to see his lovely niece, Mulata, again. And when he heard the whole story, the king made Baldwin an earl and honored Baldwin's three brothers with positions at court. Part four. The final part is Ismene's last trick.
Oh. It's a magic amulet.
God, I hope so. I hope so for your sake.
All of this is making me think of Gallivant so much, too.
It is. Oh, my God. Like, I feel like it's like now in my mind, Ismene is played by the actress that plays the queen.
Yes.
In Gallivant.
Definitely. Why am I totally blanking? Madeline.
I'm totally.
Madalena.
Madalena. Yes. This, like, she is Madalena. Oh, my God. And Mulata is totally Isabella because they were going to make her marry her cousin.
Her cousin Harry.
Except she was into it. Okay. Ismene's last trick. Well, now, of course, Baldwin married the lovely Mulata and lived happily with her in the castle on his fine estate. By and by, their joy was increased by the birth of their little son, who they named Johan.
Aw.
Everybody gets a name!
Johan!
And looking every day into her magic mirror, Lady Gertrude saw with delight the happiness of all her sons.
Aw.
But one day
about
when
Gertrude.
I know, me too. Well, so much has happened.
I know. And why does she have a magic mirror? I want more information on that. But
What is the prequel story?
Yeah, I know, for real.
I do love thinking of this story, though, now as a sequel to Gallivant, you know, where Madalena goes away, learns more to do.
Yes.
And then changes her name to Ismene and, like, makes this entire enchanted forest of hot guys who turns into animals.
Perfection.
Oh, boy. So one day when Lady Gertrude looked into her magic mirror and said, Golden mirror, magic mirror, without delaying, without staying, show me what my sons are doing. The bright mirror showed all her sons clearly in vivid colors. Only the images of Baldwin's wife and baby Johan she couldn't quite make out. They were faint and flickering, like wavering shadows on a windy day.
Ooh, spooky.
Spooky, yeah. This troubled Lady Gertrude greatly, and at once she made up her mind to visit Baldwin and see for herself if all was well with his wife and baby. But when Lady Gertrude arrived at Baldwin's estate, she felt a strange dislike for both Milada and the baby. A dislike she couldn't account for. Oh my God, I'm so excited. Is this a switcheroo?
A switcheroo.
A shenanigan happened. So Lady Gertrude just doesn't like her. In spite of all the pains she took, she was quite unable to overcome this feeling.
She's just a mad mother-in-law.
Yeah, like she's yes, she's Jane Fonda and monster-in-law. Next day, Lady Gertrude was sitting with Baldwin and Milada in a cozy little room in the castle. She had her grandson, baby Johan, on her lap, but the baby became restless and unruly. So Baldwin, to amuse the child, I like how Baldwin hasn't like noticed anything amiss. It's just like, it's just his mom who was like, yeah. I don't feel good about this.
Something's amiss. Even the baby, that's so interesting.
The baby is rubbing me the wrong way.
I mean, I get that. I also don't like babies.
But that's just generally, that's just like, you know, it's this specific baby. And like,
yeah,
I feel like if a baby is giving you bad vibes, like a specific baby, that's a, that is a demon child.
A demon child. Oh no. What happened?
So Baldwin, to amuse the child, took up the pomegranate that the good fairy had given him and began tossing it from one hand to the other.
That but is not a toy, Baldwin. That is a magic thing that you need to take care of and put it someplace safe.
No, they nope. That's not how this story works. Everyone is very reckless with their magic items.
Clearly.
Milada said she would like to taste the pomegranate.
Mm-hmm.
And Baldwin is stupid. Then we shall all share it, said Baldwin, apparently forgetting that it's a magic pomegranate that is supposed to be used to summon a fairy if you need one.
Oh my God.
So he takes a knife and he cuts it open. As Baldwin cuts the pomegranate, Milada vanished, and Baldwin, to his horror, saw beside him Ismene the sorceress.
It was a switcheroo. Oh my God.
And upon Lady Gertrude's lap, instead of a lovely baby boy, sat a hideous, misshapen little demon with great horns and goat's feet, whom Lady Gertrude, in terror, shook off her lap.
Oh my God, this is amazing.
I know. Ismene is so fun.
Yes, Ismene is amazing.
The little demon fell sprawling onto the floor. Then the wall opened, the good fairy stepped out, and at her side came Milada with the real baby Johan in her arms.
What the fuck? I thought Ismene switched with Milada like a long time ago.
I know, that also would have been funny.
Okay, so there is actually a baby. Okay.
There is a baby. This was a recent switch. You see, Baldwin, said the good fairy, I could not come until you summoned me by cutting the pomegranate. The wicked Ismene's demons carried off Milada as she was walking with her baby in the garden. They dropped her in the wilderness, but I took her into my palace. Meanwhile, Ismene had taken on the shape of Milada and had changed one of her demons into the shape of your little son, Johan. This is a very, like, why am I blanking on her name? That the mystery writer, the murder she wrote mystery writer.
Oh, Angela Lansbury, like, sum up?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's a very, like, Midnight on the Orient Express, like...
Yeah, it's like the detective like, coming out to explain exactly. What's going on.
Yeah.
The monologue
at the end where the whole plot is revealed.
Uh-huh.
But now I promise that she shall trouble you no more. I will banish her to an underground cavern where rage she will, she can do no further harm. After that, all went well. Lady Gertrude left her lovely mansion house under the mountains and came to live with Baldwin. And in Baldwin's castle, he, his mother, his wife, and his little son, Johann, lived happily ever after the end.
Aw, that was a great story.
That was a great story.
That was really fun.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
I would give it a D minus for magical horses.
What magic horse? There was a regular guy that got turned into a horse. So I think
that's not a magic horse.
It's not a magic horse.
Yeah, we need to rethink the stories that are put into that book.
We do.
I'm sure there are enough stories with magic horses that could go in it.
Yes. Yeah, you know? Like other ones that have a more prominent magic horse.
That one should have been in like a book of badass witches.
No, this would have been, I think this would have been a much better fit for like a book of princes and princesses or, a book of magic.
Sorcerers or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was really fun though. I loved that story.
Oh, it was so good. I loved it. What a roller coaster.
And nobody killed Ismani, so I feel like she could still be out there causing mischief and trouble.
I hope
and
she I love is. That for her. Me too. I hope she escapes and continues to cause mischief. Like that's my fix, I guess, for the story.
Maybe just learns to become more of a girl's girl.
Maybe like her, that's her punishment is she learns to become more of a girl's girl.
Ooh, her and the fairy teaches her how to be a girl's girl or convinces her.
Oh, maybe that's the sequel. Cause it's like the good fairy, like, yeah, she like rehabilitates her in like the underground cavern and then they do mischief together, but like more harmless mischief.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
Very fun.
Do you have a fix for it at all? Like outside of like Ismani gets out somehow?
Yeah. No, honestly, that was really good.
Yeah. I don't really have one either. That was really fun. Yeah. That's my only fix is that Ismani works on herself to become more of a girl's girl.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But then gets out to continue to do hilarious pranks with her magic.
You know, I think that's a perfect fix.
Me too.
So I guessed a prince trying to save her from her tower. Was he a prince? I don't think he was a prince.
No, because like even at the end, he just becomes an earl.
Yeah. So, and I don't know if the horses talked or not. I don't think so. And there was no magic amulet. So that was
friggin'. And the real horses were horse flies because this man is hilarious.
That's so funny. That's amazing. All right. The princess is not a major character. I would say she is. Would you?
Yeah, she is a major character because she is one of like, I would call her the main character.
Yeah. And then protagonist is the dude. Yeah, you got that point. But sadly, very sadly, there was no dragon.
I am bummed about this. I should have predicted that like the magic horse is barely in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man, I'm so disappointed by that.
I know.
Like,
why didn't I guess? Oh, well. Well, now I know from this book, although next time we read from this book, it probably will have like a talking horse and it'll be in a story a whole bunch.
You got it.
And it'll have a magic amulet.
You got to have one, you know, in this entire book. Come on. Right? The other one we read from this book was the straw horse, which was more satisfyingly and that magical.
That story was fucking hilarious. That story I was love hilarious. That story. I think we're done for the day. Thank you so much for listening to Fairy Tale Fix. If you enjoyed the show and these awesome stories like we do, please subscribe and leave us a review if you can on Apple, or if you can leave us a star rating on Spotify. And I think you can leave reviews on Audible, which is kind of fun. If you love the show and want to support us, you can get extra episodes, merch, books, and other cool bonus content at our Patreon by signing up at fairytalefix.cash. We've got a ton of bonus odes and they're always really fun. You can also find us on Instagram at FairyTaleFixPod and feel free to message us. You can email us or DM us on Instagram or Facebook. Tell us your favorite fairy tales, what tales you want to hear, your favorite folklore, nursery rhymes, and movie recommendations, game recommendations, literally anything. We just love to hear from you. Oh, and our email is info@fairytalefixpod.com. And so all of the animals asked way more questions, especially the python. He asked the iguana way more questions before just assuming he was mad at him, so he didn't run into the rabbit's house. So the rabbit didn't run through the forest and scare the crow, and the crow didn't send off the alarm and scare the monkey, so the monkey didn't fall on a limb and kill the poor little baby owlet.
It's a great fix for that story, I think. And Ismene, the hilarious sorceress, realizes somehow that she needs to do a little work on herself down in her underground prison, and then the good fairy lets her out where she can continue to do amazing magical pranks to people that deserve it this time.
And they all lived
happily ever after. The end.
The end.